From 90.9 WBUR, this is a special live edition of Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Boston Globe political reporter David Scharfenberg.
As you can hear, we are broadcasting live from the McCormick Theater on the vibrant campus of UMass Boston. And yeah, there's a presidential election going on, but in November, Massachusetts voters will be asked to decide on four ballot questions that could arguably have a more immediate and intense impact on life in this state. So today, we launch a special effort we're calling the Election Ballot Debate Series. It's hosted by WBUR, UMass Boston, and the Boston Globe.
Every Tuesday in our four-week series, we'll be diving deep into one of the ballot questions. Today, we'll hear the debate over question two, the proposal to expand the number of charter schools in Massachusetts.
And we have a great panel to have that debate with us. You'll be hearing from them in a moment. We'd also like everyone listening to get involved. We'll tell you how to do that a little bit later. But first, let me introduce to you Chancellor of UMass Boston, J. Keith Motley. He joins us to tell you a little bit more about these debates. Chancellor Motley, welcome, and thank you so much for hosting us.
Well, thank you, Meghna, and also thank you, David, for moderating this important debate on whether we should raise the cap on the number of charter schools in Massachusetts. It's question two, as was mentioned, on the November 8th ballot. Good afternoon, and welcome to the first of four debates on the ballot questions facing voters this fall here at the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. I want to particularly thank our co-host, WBUR, and the Boston Globe. And also a special thanks to our first debaters, former State Representative Marty Waltz. Yes, and also City Councilor Tito Jackson, here to discuss with this vibrant audience the merits for and against raising the charter cap. I couldn't think of a better place for this debate on education than here at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, this capital city's public research university and home to the College of Education and Human Development that is a top provider of teachers who lead classrooms in Boston and beyond. I also need to say how appropriate it is to be a graduate school named in honor of John W. McCormick, who rose from the projects of South Boston to become the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, where he fought for health care, economic opportunity, civil rights, and education. Finally, when I look out at this incredible audience, I see a diverse group of people who are passionate about education and understand that how we vote on question two in November may have a broad impact on the many diverse populations across our state. I thank you for your interest and participation. So thanks again to the Globe, WBUR, and Dean David Cash of the McCormick Graduate School. I look forward to listening to all of these debates on Radio Boston.
Chancellor of UMass Boston, J. Keith Motley. Chancellor Motley, thank you so much. Well, as the Chancellor said, today we will be discussing question two. It proposes allowing the state to approve up to 12 charter schools each year, indefinitely. Now, WBUR just this morning released a poll that shows that 41% of voters statewide currently support the measure, 48% oppose. So first, we're going to present to you this report from WBUR's Tanya Mosley. She has an explanation about question two and the split that some parents and families are feeling about the issue.
As the front desk manager of a charter school in Boston, 38-year-old Sandra Marks spends her days helping others. When she's not dealing with sick students.
Honey, is somebody picking you up? Somebody's picking you up.
Or helping out teachers and staff, Marks is on the phone, answering calls from nervous parents desperate to find a good school.
I just tell them what I know. That's all I tell them. And I say, it's really hard to, you know, a lot of them call and they say, you know, can I transfer in the middle of the year? Or can I just sign up for your school? And unfortunately, no, it's a lottery process.
But Marks is also dealing with the same dilemma at home. Her oldest, now in college, went to public school in Cambridge. Her middle daughter just received a full scholarship to a prep school. But now she lives in Lynn, And she's worried most about where her 19-month-old son will go to school.
Just really, really, really concerned. I've lost a little sleep, and people tell me it's early and anything can happen. But, you know, you're not a mom if you're not worrying.
Marks has done research on both the public schools and the one charter school in her town. And none of them were a good fit for her older children.
I know people who have sold their homes to get their kids into the better school districts. I don't have that luxury.
Like Marks, many families are not happy with their choices. Since the inception of charter schools in 1993, there's been an explosion of interest from parents seeking better choices. For more than 20 years, the charter limit has been set to no more than 120 schools. There are currently 78 charters in the state. And while some have questioned the numbers, the Massachusetts Department of Elementary and Secondary Education reports for the 2015-2016 school year, nearly 34,000 students were on the charter school waiting lists. Question 2, up before voters in November, would give the department the authority to lift the charter school cap, allowing up to 12 new charter schools or the growth of existing charters. Priority would be given to charters that open in low-performing districts.
I'm holding the no on to save our public schools sign.
Those on both sides are campaigning hard. And both sides have spent big bucks on television advertisements and door-to-door solicitations.
I feel very strongly that parents should be given the right to choose where to send their kids to school. And that should not depend on the zip code or the city or town that they live in.
Eileen O'Connor is with Great Schools Massachusetts, Yes on Two, an organization pushing to lift the cap. O'Connor argues allowing more charter schools to open will give parents better options. And other supporters have argued that more charter schools will force traditional public schools to compete, which in turn will make all schools better. Steve Crawford with Save Our Schools, No on Two, says this idea is ridiculous.
It's a reckless proposal that will seriously damage the schools that educate 96% of the kids in Massachusetts.
Crawford is speaking about the overall number of traditional public school students in the state. Students who choose charter schools take funding with them for their charter tuition. Crawford's organization argues while charters take money from the state and districts, there is no uniform oversight, and the performance levels vary. He says more charter schools will strip traditional public schools even further.
It's not just about a per student cost. It's all of those fixed costs that the local taxpayers have voted to commit to their local schools. And these privately run charters are just draining it out of communities all across the state.
In a perfect world, Mark says, parents wouldn't have to make these choices.
What I wish is the charter schools and the traditional public schools, I wish they would partner, because all of us just want the best for these kids.
Well, that report from WBUR's Tanya Mosley. All right, so let's have the debate. We ask the two groups leading efforts on either side of question two to offer their chosen representative for today's debate. Great Schools Massachusetts put forward the ballot question, and representing the Yes on Two side, we have Marty Walls, former state representative and former chair of the legislature's education committee. Representative Walls, welcome.
Great to be with you.
And representing the Save Our Public Schools, which opposes question two, we have Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson. Welcome to you, Councilor Jackson.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we begin, a few ground rules. We are breaking up this debate into two topics, funding and equity. We'll spend 20 minutes on each of these topics, starting with a 10-minute question and answer from Meghna and me. Participants will have 1 minute to respond to each question.
Then the second half of each 20-minute period will be a robust, more open discussion between the participants. We'll also take questions there. And then at the end of the debate, Councillor Jackson and Representative Walls will each have a 30-second closing argument. Now, for folks here at our live UMass Boston audience and listeners listening on the air or online, there are several ways you can participate. We are broadcasting a Facebook live feed of today's event. You can go to facebook.com/radioboston to watch the feed and submit questions there. We are also taking questions via Twitter. Use the hashtag MAballots. That's ballots with an S, MAballots.
Okay, let's get started. Our first topic is equity, and we'll start with you, Councillor Tito Jackson.
Thank you.
All right. Critics of charter schools worry about them sapping resources from traditional public schools, as we just heard in that reported piece. But those traditional public schools have struggled for decades to get Black and Latino students to achieve at the same level as their white peers. Why should we be so concerned about protecting traditional public schools when research shows that charters have made substantial progress toward closing the achievement gap?
One of the aspects of the achievement gap that actually you didn't bring up there was English language learners. So let's take, for instance, Edward M. Brook Charter School. They actually have less than 1% English language learners in their schools. Boston Public Schools actually has over 30%. And so the schools that are actually closing the achievement gap, like the Nathan Hale School, in Roxbury, an area that I actually live in, need the resources to continue to innovate. Schools like the Hurley School in the south end section of the city are also doing some great innovative work there. And so the resources in the city of Boston that are being extracted are $175 million of the $215 million that actually come from the state of Massachusetts. We need those resources to close that achievement gap, and we are moving forward and doing a better job on a year-by-year basis.
Well, in terms of outcomes, I mean, there has been a lot of research done. There was a 2015 study from Stanford University that compared standardized test scores of charter school students and Boston Public School students with similar demographic backgrounds, and they found that average academic growth of charter school students surpassed public school students. I'm also looking at a MIT study from December of 2015 that focused specifically on charter school students who were enrolled and were either special ed or English language learners, Counselor Jackson, to your point there. And this MIT study found that charter school students who are English language learners actually scored higher on MCAS math exams than non-special ed students in traditional elementary and high schools.
So interestingly, the MIT study that you brought up, I have a little bit of information from that study. So charters have actually really pushed this over-testing piece, right? So let's actually look at actual outcomes. And that's section 4.4 on page 15 in that study actually notes, it says, does charter attendance also increase high school graduation rate? Graduation rates? Perhaps surprisingly, given the gains in the test score graduation requirements, the estimate in Table 7 suggests not. In fact, charter attendance reduces the likelihood a student graduates on time by 12.5 percentage points, a statistically significant effect. Charters reduce the four-year high school graduation rate more for boys than for girls. When we're talking about opportunities and equity for young Black and Latino boys, that we're looking at the national level with MBK and others, we need to make sure that we're focusing right there. So I guess I question, and by the way, this study was commissioned by the Boston Foundation.
Point taken. But the same study, we could talk for an hour on each individual study, but that same study also said the graduation rate in 5 years is similar to that of district schools. But Representative Walz, let me just turn to you to Councillor Jackson's sort of deeper point. About the percentage of ELL students who are even enrolled in charter schools. We've got some numbers here. This is just 8% of Boston charter schools overall. The students are English language learners, as Councillor Jackson said, compared with 30% in the district schools. So, I mean, should charters be required to mirror the makeup of the districts where they are? And if not, how can we say charter schools really are for everyone?
When I was serving in the state legislature in 2009, I was chair of the Education Committee and had the opportunity to look at all of this data. And in 2010, Governor Patrick signed a new law that increased the number of charter schools. In exchange for that increase in charter school seats, the legislature imposed new requirements and new accountability on charter schools, including related to the recruitment and retention of special ed students and English language learners. Since that law went into effect, we have seen a dramatic increase in the number of English language learners going to charter schools, particularly in Boston. So when you look at the students who are entering charter schools today in terms of English language learners, they mirror the population in Boston public schools. And so we recognize that things may not have gone as well in the past in terms of recruiting English language learners, but we gave new tools to the charter schools so they could reach those families, recruit them to come to charter schools, and then charter schools are held accountable for retaining those students all the way through until they get to graduation. So this is a problem that has been recognized in the past that we've addressed, and we're seeing extraordinary results as a result of that 2010 law.
Councillor Jackson, what do you say to the single mother in your district whose kid is on the waiting list for a high-achieving charter school, and she says, I just can't afford to wait 10 years for the traditional public school in my area to improve.
Actually, I would say to her that she's actually probably on the waiting list for a traditional public school. What people need to know is that Boston Public Schools actually has a longer waiting list than the charter schools in the city of Boston. And in fact, that mother, and oftentimes is a mother that actually has one child in the charter and one child in a district school. And my question for her would be, would you want to do like question two is asking us to do? Would you want to take resources away from your child in the public school that educates 96% of the students in the state of Massachusetts? And in Boston, actually educates the most vulnerable students. 4,000 homeless students are actually in the Boston public schools. And move those funds for those vulnerable students over to charter schools. The underlying issue here is that this is an unfunded mandate. This is put forward as an unfunded mandate and provides no additional funding. We are $1 billion behind in the state of Massachusetts in funding, and that's the actual conversation that we should talk about. Current charters are underfunded. Current public schools are underfunded. And as a person, Ms. Marks brought up, we should be coming together as we started in 1993 to actually come together and bring up all schools and all children and leave no child behind.
Okay, Councilor, let me follow that up. If we don't expand charter schools, and traditional public schools have for decades now, even before charters were a significant force, have struggled to make up this achievement gap, what's the long-term plan here to meaningfully improve performance, academic gains for low-income Black and Latino students?
Yeah, so interestingly, we've learned a lot from charter schools. Extended school day, which is one thing that we've adopted. We've also adopted autonomies at the school site level where a principal can actually make some choices in terms of hiring. My question back to those charters is, what are you learning from the Boston Public Schools? Are you learning how to take care of special education students? Are you learning how to take care of those homeless students that we take? And as noted, charter schools don't even take schools to backfill the seats that they currently have. In addition, they don't take students in the middle of the year like the Boston Public Schools. So what I would say to them is that it's absolutely critical that we make sure that we have enough funding for every single student, because the schools that we hurt the most are actually the schools that are actually doing the best by taking away those resources, like Boston Latin School, which doesn't have eighth grade science, even though that the MCAS is given in eighth grade.
I want to shift gears here a little bit. Remember, the second half of this first portion of the conversation will be a little bit more free-flowing. Representative Walz, for some who oppose question two, one of the issues that it comes down to is this, and I'm going to paraphrase Carol Burris. She's a former New York high school principal. And she says, the democratic governance of our public schools is an American tradition worth saving. And then the Annenberg Institute for School Reform at Brown University earlier this year released a study that they analyzed every board of trustees for every charter school in the state of Massachusetts. And they found that 31% of trustees statewide are affiliated with the financial services or corporate sector. Only 14% were parents. 60% of the charter boards had no parent representation on their boards whatsoever. Those that did were largely confined to charter schools that served mostly white students. Here's an example. City on a Hill Schools in Roxbury, and this is according to the Annenberg Institute report, has schools in Roxbury and New Bedford. 14-member board trustees for all three of those schools. Only one member of the board lives in New Bedford. Three live in Boston, but none in Roxbury. The rest in Brookline, Cambridge, Cohasset, and Hingham. So they ask, how can Massachusetts charter schools be considered locally controlled and locally accountable?
Well, the point about local control is well taken. It is local control that got us into the situation that we're in, where tens of thousands of children are being left behind by their local district schools. The reason charter schools exist is because local school districts have wholly failed to educate far too many children in this state. And charter schools were created in 1993 specifically to give families a choice because they needed to get out of their failing district schools. And so the idea here is to get away from locally controlled schools, in some instances for charters, because local control has led to far too many children not being well educated by district schools.
What about the question of local accountability?
So there is a substantial amount of accountability for Massachusetts charter schools. In fact, Massachusetts charter schools are held to more accountable than district schools. If charter schools don't do a good job educating their students, the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education closes them. Generation after generation after generation of students in Boston, for example, have attended failing schools, and those schools have not been shut down. There's a profound lack of accountability in district schools in this state. There's a great level of accountability for charter schools, and that is a strength of Massachusetts charter schools.
Representative Walz, just to follow up here, much of the money flowing into the pro-charter campaign comes from organizations that have been supported over the years by financial executives from here and out of the state. Why should they have such influence over the education of inner-city kids?
We're delighted when anybody wants to step up and support our efforts to support great public schools in Massachusetts, whether they're district schools or whether they're charter schools. The more help we get educating all of our kids in this state, that is all to the good. We have the strongest charter schools in the country. We're a national model because we have done such a good job educating all kids in our charter schools. We have a remarkable record educating Black and Latino kids, particularly in our urban centers from low-income families. We do extraordinary work in our charter schools here. We are a national model, and it's not surprising that people around the country are paying attention to us. But I would also note, if we want to get into sources of money, the Vote No campaign is also being funded by out-of-state money as well, so I'm not really sure this is where the debate should be happening. I think the debate really should be about who's doing the best job educating children, as opposed to the adult concerns about who's donating to the campaign. I think we should be about kids, not the adults.
Councilor Jackson, charter schools, as critics like to point out, have some of the highest suspension rates in the state, with several suspending around 40% of their students for at least one day during the 2014-2015 school year. But charter schools say they use these suspensions, particularly at the beginning of the school year, to establish a culture of safety and responsibility that a lot of parents really crave. What's wrong with that approach?
That is wrong because that draconian discipline actually pushes young people out. It steals away their zest and joy for learning. And actually, one of the schools, Roxbury Prep, has the highest suspension rate in the country. 2 years ago, they had 60% of their students suspended. They're down to 40%. One of those young men's parents called me. His name is Ajani. And he was actually called out and actually suspended, and we actually went in for a meeting. He was suspended for tapping his fist up against his chest, which in young Black male culture means that he loves his friend. The non-culturally competent teacher that he actually had suspended him. And now, just to help us know where Ajani is actually at Boston Latin School and has been called to the White House over the last 2 years in front of our First Lady, President Obama, because of the great work he's doing. Boston Public Schools continues to innovate in this space. Boston Public Schools continues to actually lower our suspension rates and have restorative justice models that we should be seeing in charter schools.
Well, I want to actually just open it up, move us to the second portion of this, the first half of this conversation, and turn it into a little bit more of a free-flowing conversation for the next few minutes. And also we'll pull in questions here from listeners via Twitter. Again, send us your questions on Twitter. Use the hashtag MAballots. Representative Walz,
I'd like to jump
I do want to ask you a follow-up, first of all, because you said that we shouldn't be worried about the adult concerns about where money is coming from in terms of funding of either side of this ballot question. Did you really mean that? I mean, we have an entire electoral system that people are very critical of, that money from whether it be large unions or large other people call it dark money, is coming from, that it does have a profound influence on our democracy, and adults should be worried about that.
What I was getting at is that in this setting today, one of the things that often gets left behind in debates are the children. So often we end up talking about these things. So let me address your concern in particular, and then I want to get back to kids. On Friday of last week, all of the campaign finance reports were filed with the Office of Campaign and Political Finance. Anyone can go on to the OCPF website and see all of the disclosure reports that were filed for everybody involved in all four of the ballot questions. And you will see pages of names of donors, and you will see how all of the campaign ballot committees spent their funds. So I recommend that anybody who wants to learn more about this issue go to the OCPF website, and you'll see a substantial amount of information that has now been disclosed that we didn't have until last Friday. So there's a couple of things, though, that I want to mention to follow up on things that Councillor Jackson said, because he said three separate things that are factually incorrect. The first one is that charter school tuition drains money from Boston Public Schools, and that the real challenge Boston is facing in terms of its budget is because of charter schools. That is incorrect. The Boston Public Schools are held harmless. Charter school tuition comes from a different section of the budget. Right now, Boston Public Schools, as it has in the past, has gotten about 35% of the overall budget. So without regard to the number of students who are going to charter schools and the amount of money that goes to charter schools, Boston Public Schools gets about 35% of the overall city budget. Right now, the budget for Boston Public Schools for its 57,000 kids is approximately $1 billion. The real issue in Boston is that it's not right-sizing the system, and so it's got enormous budget pressures every year. The system can educate up to 93,000 students. It is currently educating 57,000 per year. So its cost structure is way out of line with the number of students it's educating. So there are budget pressures every year, but the budget increases every year. In the last 6 years, Boston Public Schools' budget has increased by 25%. And so the reality is individual schools and individual programs may have their funding reduced. That has nothing whatever to do with charter schools. It is simply because Boston is not right-sizing its budget to deal with the fact that it has far too many seats for the budget
Walls,
that it
I know
supports.
You want to make a couple other points as well, but I do want to give Councillor Jackson
We're also going to get into funding in the next part of the
misstatement. So another point I want
to
make.
I'd like to give Councillor Jackson a chance to respond.
Yes. So actually, I was factually correct. Nearly 100 school committees across the state of Massachusetts are also factually correct. Over $450 million is coming out of two-thirds of the districts in the state of Massachusetts. And they come from charters. We in the city of Boston, we have 60,000 seats and we have 57,000 students. We have 20,000 students on waiting lists, and we actually have the area that we should be concentrating on is we have over 8,000 young people waiting to get in to early education seats. So I think it is absolutely wrong for us to not note that in addition to Marty's issue around funding, this issue around reimbursement and the reimbursement plan that she actually set up but voted twice to not actually fund is what leaves district schools around the state of Massachusetts in a lurch.
I know we're going to get to funding, so let me talk about a couple of other issues, and then we're going to get back to funding. Councillor Jackson tried to suggest that because some charter schools use suspensions as a form of discipline, that somehow this is pushing students out from charter schools. If you look at the data, students who attend charter schools are more likely to stay at their charter school than students who attend Boston Public Schools. It's referred to as an attrition rate. Charter schools in Boston have a lower attrition rate than district schools do. charter schools in Boston are more likely to keep their student for an entire school year than Boston Public Schools does. That's called the stability rate. You also look at a high school dropout rate. Charter schools do a better job retaining their high school students than Boston Public Schools do. And so what you want to look at is not the suspension rate, because that's a little bit of a snapshot. What you look at are suspension rates plus all of the other data. And when you look at it as a whole, you see that students are staying in charter schools at far greater numbers than students are staying in Boston public schools.
I'd like to give, in order for us to be able to move through the other set of issues as well, I'd like to give Councilor Jackson a chance to respond here really quickly.
Let's, there's a great example. Let's look at Boston Preparatory Charter School.
Let's look at the schools overall, Tito.
I mean, he's been, to be respectful, Representative Walz, he's been allowing you to speak, and let's let him have his chance.
They started out with 106 students in grade 6, and they ended with 14 students in grade 12. That is the categories that we're speaking about, and actually the category that she didn't speak about is churn. In addition, Boston Public Schools, not only do we keep our students, but we also accept students from other countries, refugees, and also homeless students in mid-year, all throughout the year. Charters don't actually do that. So when we look at how we're doing, we also need to look at how people do after school. And there's something called persistence. Persistence actually looks at how many young people actually come to a school like UMass and graduate 6 years post-graduation. So charters always look, are always going back to these test scores. So let's look at how young people actually do. So 6 years out, how do charters do? 44% of charter school students graduate college within 6 years, which is notable. But 50% of Boston Public Schools students actually graduate in that six-year time frame. That is actually from the Success Boston report. So we need to actually look at the long-term effects of charters. I love that people look at test scores, but the real underlying issue is how are we setting people up to be successful for life. And suspending people at a 60% or a 40% rate is absolutely unacceptable, and we should be changing those policies.
Okay, we're going to open things up here to the audience, as we said we would. I'd like to take a question from Catherine Shannon. I understand she's an assistant professor in science education at UMass Boston. Catherine, you have a question.
Yes, I'm going to take this back to some data. The MCAS access data on the state website suggests that English language learners in charter schools tend to have higher levels of English development upon their enrollment than students in traditional schools. How can such inequities be addressed?
I want to go back to an answer that I gave earlier, because that's precisely what the state legislature did in 2009 and 10. It recognized that there are differences in English language skills across students and across communities. And so we voted and put in place new requirements for charter schools to serve English language learners. And that's why we're seeing so much progress in the last 5 years of getting more English language learners in charter schools. For example, right now, charter schools can recruit families through the mail in their native language, where before they weren't able to do that prior to the changes in 2010. And so they're mandated to do more outreach to families where English is not the first language and recruit them to come to the schools. And so that's why we're seeing such a substantial change in the demographics of students who come to the charter schools. And we're also seeing great success with students staying in the charter schools. Again, the data that I was just citing earlier about who's staying in the charter schools and who's completing.
In the interest of time, I want to give Councilor Jackson just a couple seconds here, and then I do want to maintain our promise to everyone listening and move on to the sort of second half, which is now going to be the last third instead of half of our conversation. So a couple seconds here, Councilor Jackson.
Well, in the city of Boston, Boston Public Schools educates 30% English language learners. Charters educate 12.4% English language learners. And overall, 45% of the students in the Boston Public Schools are Latino, 7% are Asian, and about 35% are Black. These are some of our most vulnerable students. And in fact, in Boston, when students actually go through our special education program, they're called former ELL students, they actually score 10 to 15 points higher than the broader population. So Boston is making great strides in this space in educating English language learners. But by the way, this shouldn't be about winners and losers. What this should be about is that charters, which were supposed to be the test kitchen of innovation, should be sharing with us, and we should also be sharing with them. Because when any child is left behind, when any child loses, then we lose as a whole community, as a state, as well as a city.
Well, to that point, we have a Twitter comment here from Maria Ivanova, who says, it's time to come together. So I think that's probably commonly felt amongst lots of people out there. I just want to remind folks that you are listening to a special edition of Radio Boston, live from the McCormick Auditorium at UMass Boston. This is the first in our four-part series of debates on each of the Massachusetts ballot questions, and it's sponsored by our partners at UMass Boston's McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies and the Boston Globe as well. I'm here with the Boston Globe's political reporter, David Scharfenberg. We're broadcasting live on 90.9 WBUR, streaming live video on WBUR.org, thebostonglobe.com, umb.edu, as well as on Facebook. And we are, as you can hear, having a robust discussion about question two, and that is the question of whether or not the state should approve up to 12 new charter schools every year. You've been hearing former Representative Marty Walls on the yes on two side and Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson on the no on two side. So we've touched upon funding a little bit, but let's move on a little bit more and dive deeper into the question of funding for the next 10-ish minutes or so, David.
Okay, the first question goes to Marty Walls. Marty, when students leave traditional public schools for charters, they take thousands of dollars in state aid with them. The ballot question would allow for the creation or expansion of 12 charter schools per year. Over time, that adds up to a lot of charter schools and a lot of state aid pulled out of the traditional public schools. At what point does the drain on traditional public schools become too much? How many charter schools are too many?
The reality is the funding follows the students. So right now, 4% of public school students in Massachusetts go to charter schools, and 4% of public education funding goes to charter schools. So it makes sense that the money would follow the student, and the money really is about students' education. And the answer to the specific question of how much is enough is really going to depend on parents. The reason we're seeing this discussion about the cap lift is that parents are demanding access to more charter schools, but only in a small number of communities. Where parents are happy with their district schools, you're not seeing an outcry for charter schools. So in Weston and Wellesley and Wayland and lots of the W towns, you're not seeing a big demand for charter schools. Charter schools could go to those communities and many other communities on November 9th, whether this ballot question passes or not. What this ballot question is about is the small number of communities that are at their limit. And the reason we're here is that parents want more choices. Parents are desperate for great schools, and they're being denied that choice. And so very few places in the state are ever going to be affected by this ballot question. The reason we're here is parents are desperate for better schools,
to the 1 minute per response for this portion of the conversation, Representative Walls. Thank you. I mean, Councilor Jackson, let me turn that same issue back around to you, because the city of Boston's own funding policy for schools is weighted student funding. I mean, the BPS's website says it's a, quote, more equitable, transparent, and predictable system. I mean, in other words, even within the district, the city's money follows the child, regardless of which district school the student attends. So why doesn't that work for charters?
It doesn't work for charters because the funding follows the child, but the costs actually don't follow the children. So I'll give you an example. So if we were a family of four and David went off to college, right, our mortgage would still be the same. Our light bill would still be the same. Our water bill would still be the same. And so, again, this is an unfunded mandate. They could have put forward something that actually brought forward more funding for all schools and actually looked out for all students. 96% of students in the state of Massachusetts do not go to a charter school right now. In addition, there are 43 more charters that are actually on the table right now, and 3,000 open seats, unfilled seats, in the city of Boston. We should be looking for help for all students and elevating students as a whole, rather than choosing and picking winners and losers.
Hmm. Well, let me follow up with that, Representative Walz, because we, in the previous segment, we did touch upon the reimbursements a little bit that come from the state when students leave the district and go to a charter school. Now, the reimbursements are staged over several years for people who aren't familiar with it. The current scheme is 100% reimbursement for increases in, when 100% reimbursement in the first year and 25% for the next five. But the state's own reimbursement coffers haven't been fully funded since fiscal year 2011. And in we're looking at numbers for FY16, the reimbursements are underfunded by the statewide by $47 million. So the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education has decided to front load those reimbursements. So it looks like districts are likely to receive 95% for the first year and then 0% from years 2 through 6. So how can districts be expected to make any kind of effective transition with such an abrupt end to state-promised reimbursements?
We've been doing these district reimbursements for 17 years, and they have been fully funded in nearly every year except in the depths of the recession. The state has sent approximately $1 billion back to school districts to help ease the transition when students go to charter schools, to help them readjust. What we're seeing is that some districts are not making the adjustments that they need to make due to their enrollment. But let me also make another observation. When students go to a Voc Tech school, the funding follows the student. When students participate in the METCO program, funding follows the students. And there are not district reimbursements for Voc Tech schools and the METCO program. What's really going on here is that the teachers' unions are funding a campaign against charter schools because they don't want the competition. So you don't hear the teachers' union complaining when kids go to a Voc Tech school. And you don't hear people complaining when kids get into the METCO program. So I think we need to be honest about the fact of what's really going on here regarding student funding and what's underneath some of these complaints.
Councilor Jackson.
Correction. The METCO program actually has an annual appropriation. Those dollars do not actually come from the students in the Boston Public Schools. In addition, the difference between the METCO program is that the METCO program actually was voted on by each city and town that actually has it. Again, respecting the local control that we should have over our schools. I was a METCO student. In addition, for me, I went to Brookline. Charters actually took money away from the school system that I went to. But the real underlying issue is that schools are underfunded at at a rate of $1 billion right now. So what we should be doing, and by the way, if there was more money on the table, I'd be sitting right on that side, right? But there is not more and additional money on the table. This detracts from the dollars that are that we have for public school education and detracts from the most vulnerable students in the state of Massachusetts.
We're going to move on because we're running short on time here. Councilor Jackson, I want to ask you something that Marty Walz raised earlier. The Boston Public Schools have lost millions in state aid as charter school enrollment grows, but the city has actually stepped up with new money of its own, plugging that budget hole. A report from the Boston Municipal Research Bureau shows that overall funding for the Boston Public Schools has actually increased by 25% over the last 5 years. So why the hue and cry, the great concern about charters draining money from traditional public schools if their budgets are actually going up?
Well, first, our rate of loss from charters is actually going up faster than that. Every single budget goes up. From 1630 till now, we've actually had additional funding for education. The real underlying issue is that if we open this hole, and again, I'm not against charters. I'm actually on an advisory board for a charter school. But the issue here is that this is an unfunded mandate. If you open up the door of 12 additional schools on an annual basis, then you take more funding from the district schools that are working with the most vulnerable students. As I noted before, we have 4,000 homeless students that are in the Boston Public Schools.
But how can you argue that they're really losing money if the city is stepping up and filling that gap? I mean,
Well, actually, the city didn't. If the city didn't step up and fill that full gap. In fact, We have four high schools that don't have librarians this year. We have additional students in autistic classes, and for our most vulnerable students who are our trauma students, like at the Manning School, we have less supports for them. We have less counselors. We have less social workers. So we actually are doing what we have to do right now, but we are not serving the young people at the rate that we should be serving them. We're turning our back on them.
Representative Walls, let me follow that up quickly, too. The city, in stepping up with more money for the schools, has had to pull money out of other areas of the budget. Is that really sustainable long term?
This is what cities and towns do. They have to make choices about how their resources are allocated across their budget. I give Boston incredible credit for making sure that approximately 35% of every budget goes to Boston Public Schools. We in Boston prioritize education. What's happening in the charter schools is not affecting the BPS budget. And I want to make an observation here about the amount of resources available for Boston. Boston spends more per pupil than any of the 100 largest school districts in America. It is so we are spending, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. And so I think the real question is, how is Boston spending its resources? It's not a lack of money writ large in the entire city. It's how we're allocating the money. And that's the conversation that we need to be having in this city. Would everybody like more money for Boston Public Schools in the city of Boston? Of course we would. But like households and everybody, we have to make difficult choices. Boston's prioritizing its public schools. At the same time, we're also educating more kids in charters. The answer is we need to improve Boston Public Schools, and we need to get kids off the charter school wait list.
Representative Walls, if I may, we just have, I'm looking at about 3 minutes here before I want to give you guys both the chance to give closing arguments. And so that was, we were supposed to have 10 minutes for the free-flowing portion, but we're down to three, and I'm not surprised because this has been a very good conversation. So I'm just, instead of taking more questions, because we've got a lot of comments, actually, on the Twitter feed. So follow MA Ballots, that hashtag, and you can see that other conversation going on. But again, in the last now 2.5 minutes, just really quickly, Councillor Jackson, I just want to give you a couple seconds to respond to whatever you want to respond to that Representative Wall says, and then I'll give you the same opportunity, Representative.
This debate that we're having around whether or not we have the funding that we need. With this ballot, this unfunded ballot question, we could be at a place where the city of Boston loses its AA bond rating. Because when we run out of our state funding, what could actually happen is that we could be in a situation where the city of Boston will be taking our general fund money to send over to charter schools. This is, again, an unfunded mandate that actually has, Moody's has actually spoken to this and actually put out an advisory based on the fact that charters growing at too fast of a rate could actually have catastrophic effects on a budget.
Do you want to respond to the
bond
rating?
I sure do, because it makes it sound like the money that comes from the state to educate children somehow belongs to Boston Public Schools and they get to keep it, as opposed to this is money allocated from the state to educate children in public schools, both district schools and charter schools. The city council and the mayor have a duty to all children to educate them, and that's what the state funding is for. It's not just to go to Boston Public Schools and fund its bureaucracy. This is about educating kids in public schools, no matter where they want to go to school. And so let's
Council
just
Jackson,
have an honest conversation about
that. Let me give you a couple seconds,
because
I'm looking, we're bearing down on time here before your closing arguments. A couple seconds.
As I stated, if this were going to actually help, if this funding was actually going to help all students, then I would be absolutely for it. It absolutely doesn't help all students and detracts from the funding for public schools. And that is a very, and this, again, is not anti-charter. It is against question two, which is really an unfunded mandate.
I want to just ask you both briefly a super quick question. Again, give you maybe about 30 seconds each to answer, because you both are familiar that the NAACP in its national conference in July approved a resolution that called for a moratorium on the expansion of charter schools because the resolution said, quote, charter schools have contributed to the increased segregation rather than diverse integration of our public school system.
So let me just jump in on that.
You can have about 30 seconds.
The reality is that that's a national organization looking at charter schools across the country. Our charter school sector here is extremely different than what you see in other states. the head of the NAACP in New England, Juan Cofield, said the other night in an interview that Massachusetts charter schools are among the best, if not the best, in the country. So we need to look at, this is about us in Massachusetts. What's going on in the other 49 states? That's for somebody else's concern. The voters in Massachusetts need to be concerned for Massachusetts kids. 83% of all kids in Boston charter schools are Black or Latino, and it reflects the population in our city, and those are the kids who are being left behind, and the NAACP should be about lifting up all families,
Councilor Jackson?
Not cherry-picking data.
Well, it should be noted that Juan Cofield, who was just quoted, who heads the New England branch of the NAACP, is actually against this question number two. He's actually the lead sponsor against it.
But Black Lives Matter
is also on that side. But interestingly, the Mass Municipal Association, as well as nearly 100 school committees and countless numbers of city councils across the state, are on this side. If this were actually to help, if this would actually help, they would not be on the no on question two side.
Okay, we're going to have to stop it here. We're running out of time. Each representative will now have 30 seconds for a closing argument based on a coin flip before the show. We'll hear first from Marty Walls, representing the supporters of question two, Great Schools Massachusetts.
When you break through the rhetoric of this campaign and what's been going on back and forth, the issue is pretty straightforward. Are we going to allow more students to attend great schools in Massachusetts? This isn't about district versus charter. We're not pitting families against each other, as some of this rhetoric would suggest. What we do know is that charter schools get extraordinary results, particularly with low-income and minority children who, for generation after generation, have been left behind by their traditional district schools. Personally, I have a great sense of urgency. Thousands of kids are on wait lists. They have one chance to go to school. This is it. A yes vote on question two means more kids are going to be able to go to great schools in this state.
Okay,
Thank you so much.
Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson, representing Save Our Public Schools, 30 seconds.
You actually can't take away the school choices of public school parents in the name of school choice for charter school parents. Right. This actually, they are accepting money from many organizations that were part of foreclosing on our homes. We will not allow them to foreclose on our communities. This is a fiscally irresponsible ballot question. It actually takes away local accountability. And this actually should be about leadership and uplifting all children in the state of Massachusetts. And for that reason, we should be no on question two and do the right thing by all children in the state of Massachusetts.
Well, actually, on that point, I have to say we ended up with agreement that everyone's best interests are in looking after all the children of the state of Massachusetts. And that is all the time we have today. I would like to extend my deepest gratitude to our guests and our debaters, Representative Marty Walls, former state representative and former chair of the legislature's Education Committee, and to Boston City Councilor Tito Jackson. Thank you both so much for participating in this conversation. Special thank you also to our partners at the Boston Globe, to David Scharfenberg, my co-moderator, and to UMass Boston, particularly David Cash, the dean of the John W. McCormick Graduate School of Policy and Global Studies. Next week, we will pick this up with another debate on another question. It'll be question three, which would ban the sale of meat and eggs from animals who are confined. That's it. I'm Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Thanks so much.